Morley. She's Associate Director of Operations and Research, Associate at the Minnesota Center for Healthcare Ethics in St. Paul, Minnesota. She received her law degree from William Mitchell College of Law and her MPH from the University of Minnesota. And she focuses her professional research on issues at the intersection of public health policy, law, and global public health ethics.
Good morning, everybody. As Bill said, I am at the Minnesota Center for Healthcare Ethics. I'm also an adjunct professor of business law at St. Catherine University in St. Paul. And so I'd like to turn your attention to the issue of compulsory licensing, such that we can expand developing nations' access to brand name drugs if we can understand the impediments to compulsory licensing. I have no conflicts to disclose at this time. With great appreciation, I'd like to acknowledge my advisor, Dr. Roger Feldman, at the University of Minnesota School of Public Health, as well as the Consortium on Law and Values at the University of Minnesota, as it provided generous financial support in the form of a grant for this project. All right. This project was conceived pursuant to the very serious public health issue of access to medicines, most particularly that the high prices of brand name drugs in developing countries can certainly severely inhibit vulnerable populations' access to medicines. One way in which this project might be addressed is simply if we're able to maximize access to these medicines through effective use of intellectual property laws, most particularly the mechanism of compulsory licensing. Just an overview of my presentation today. We'll simply review some basic trade law, although Hadi has already done so. And so then we'll proceed on to try and look at what are the impediments to compulsory licensing, and are they in fact legitimate, and what might be their magnitude. We're all very familiar with the concept of a patent here in this room, of course, but I'd just like to highlight some of the operative language here. A patent is really an opportunity for a country to have, for a company to have a limited period of exclusivity such that, say, a drug company can recoup its research and development expenses. And so this is just a quotation from The Economist, such that it is doubtful that the huge investments needed to develop new products would be made without the prospect of patent protection. That's kind of the operating assumption here. What is a compulsory license? Well, it's a very important corollary to the concept of a patent, and it's defined by the World Trade Organization as the opportunity for the authorities to provide a license to a company other than the owner of the patent to produce the subject matter of the patent. For example, a compulsory license is the ability to manufacture generically a drug that's currently a brand name drug under patent. In my opinion, compulsory licenses are rarely issued. They have been occasionally leveraged in negotiations with pharmaceutical companies to obtain discounted prices for vulnerable populations. Hadi already went over some of this. The operative rule here is the TRIPS agreement, which permitted WTO members to implement, it required WTO members to implement robust patent protections in exchange for expanded access to developed trade markets. In exchange, it required relatively stringent patent protections to be developed within those countries. Subsequent to that was the Doha Declaration, in which the public health potential of the compulsory license was really reiterated and really emphasized at the time. Okay. And so while compulsory licenses have great potential to improve public health, such that they can expand access to affordable drugs, they're relatively rarely issued. And so the question is why? And so I proceeded to conduct a literature search to try and categorize and collect the claims in the literature as to why might nations be dissuaded from issuing compulsory licenses, given the value they may have to protect public health. And so I've categorized these cited impediments into the concept of a barrier to compulsory licensing and some secondary effects, adverse consequences that may flow from licensing. Commentators generally suggest that information and infrastructure challenges will comprise the majority of the barriers to issuing compulsory licensing. Nations may be unaware of their rights to issue licenses. They may lack the legal infrastructure to pursue or implement a license, and they certainly may have difficulty coordinating such that they can successfully implement a license even if the laws are on the books. Unlike barriers to implementation, I've defined secondary effects as the adverse consequences that may flow from the use of compulsory licensing, and I've put them in, separated them into two classifications. The first one is essentially that nations may have fears, whether they're or apprehensions, whether they're founded or unfounded, that adverse consequences might flow pursuant to their use of compulsory licensing. This may be based on their perceptions of other nations' experiences with compulsory licensing, for example. In the second classification, essentially, were there outcomes that may effectively diminish the public health value of compulsory licensing, consequently dissuading nations from issuing licenses in the first place, if in fact the outcome is negated. All right. Of the first classification of secondary effects, nations who are contemplating compulsory licensing might simply be apprehensive that legal challenges may follow, initiated, say, by drug companies. Perhaps trade retaliation, indirect or direct, could be a response to nations who are essentially breaking patents and producing drugs generically. It's conceivable. They may also be apprehensive that their influx of international aid might decline. Certainly something very important to consider. Again, whether founded or unfounded, it has been cited as a potential concern. There are a few others concerns or potential secondary effects that have been enumerated in the literature, that direct foreign investment might decline pursuant to a nation's engagement in compulsory licensing. Multinational companies may view licensing as unfriendly to business and certainly divert their funds and investments elsewhere. Another suggestion is that pharmaceutical innovation into a nation may decline pursuant to compulsory licensing. The argument is that perhaps fewer patent applications will be filed in nations that are issuing licenses on those patents. Perhaps drug companies will prefer to minimize their investment in developing drugs that will affect, that improve the health of afflicted countries. The second classification of secondary effects, as I said, are those that may just simply negate the benefit, minimize the access that compulsory licensing is designed to foster. This could be a situation where licensed drugs are diverted to other markets, perhaps, under the problem of parallel importation. Perhaps licensed drugs are sold at prices just slightly below that of the brand name drugs, again, inhibiting the access and affordability that the compulsory license is supposed to foster. So all of these have been enumerated in the literature as potential reasons why compulsory licensing is simply not capitalized on by nations who are facing very significant public health epidemics and really need help. And so to the extent evidence was available, this was the problem, I did search primary and secondary source material to try and evaluate the existence and legitimacy of some of these barriers and to the extent available, what might be their magnitude. I have found that the prevalence of compulsory licensing statutes and access to information that we currently have really does indicate that these first two, lack of awareness and lack of legal infrastructure, really don't stand currently as a significant barrier to compulsory licensing, if in fact they may have been at one time, certainly. The third example here there may be potentially difficulties in coordination and communication such that countries may not be able to implement licenses in the way that they'd like. There have been examples of this in the past, so this third point certainly may still exist as a barrier to implementing licenses. There certainly exists a lingering apprehension of legal challenges amongst nations who are thinking about engaging in compulsory licensing, but I would argue that litigation is really an unwarranted concern simply if nations narrowly tailor their licensing statutes and implement licenses in a reasonable manner and avail themselves of opportunities for dispute resolution to minimize frivolous suits. On the other hand, however, nations contemplating compulsory licensing ought to consider potential trade repercussions. We've heard this a little bit before earlier in the presentations. In the past, nations have found themselves subject to increased trade scrutiny, very significant concern. However, I would point out that the extent to which trade retaliation is a current concern is unknown in light of the formation of new and current trade agreements, particularly those that contain TRIPS Plus lines. All right, and there really is essentially insufficient evidence in the literature and in data available online to conclude whether or not international aid will decline and whether direct foreign investment is implicated by the use of compulsory licensing. In part four of this study, I've evaluated those further. All right. And some qualitative research that's generally available does suggest that compulsory licensing on drugs that are needed globally really doesn't diminish investment or pharmaceutical technology transfer into those nations. And expenditures on neglected drugs are so small and collaborative with governmental funders that that's not really expected to decline anyway. I would also argue that with respect to the second classification of secondary effects, parallel importation and shadow pricing, these are potential but avoidable secondary effects if nations are able to put in place proper regulations and advanced planning to minimize some of these untoward ultimate effects. I'd like to turn your attention now to a quantitative study that I conducted on the interrelation between compulsory licensing, direct foreign investment, acronym DFI, and patent application filings, as these warranted further study. As I said, further research was really needed to address this particular question. Does a nation's use of compulsory licensing negatively impact that nation's economic prosperity? This is really a pivotal question and a significant concern for nations who are contemplating availing themselves of public health protections to expand access to drugs. I've noted that in the literature, there has been speculation that foreign investment in patent applications will decline in light of subsequent to compulsory licensing. That's a significant claim that needs to be evaluated. Real 2003 annual direct foreign investment per capita in U.S. dollars and annual patent applications filed from 1980 to 2008 in 10 countries listed here, served as the dependent variables in this analysis. These countries are chosen as they've engaged in compulsory licensing activities to some extent, and they have some data available such that an analysis can be conducted. The annual number of compulsory licenses issued and the number of threats to issue public threats pursuant, say, to negotiations to issue licenses in these 10 countries and this relevant time period served as the independent variables in this analysis. And I'd like to point out my control variable, which was developed in great consultation with my advisor, Dr. Roger Feldman, an economist. My control variable was a real annual 2003 GDP purchase power parity in U.S. dollars per capita. Kind of a mouthful, but that was a very effective control variable for this analysis. And missing data in my study were imputed by standard curve fitting regression techniques. I input the data into SATA 11.0 and conducted country-level regressions for each of the dependent variables, and also a pooled cross-sectional time series regression analysis for each dependent variable. And we can move on to the results. For only one country, Thailand, was compulsory licensed use a statistically significant predictor for direct foreign investment in the positive direction? This is an interesting result, and it's potentially at odds with the hypothesis postulated at the beginning of this study. Why might this be? Well, I posit that perhaps it's attributable to chance, or maybe given the economic and political situation of Thailand. The second result is that in no case was licensing or the threat of a license a statistically significant predictor of the number of patent applications filed in the country. Next, I conducted the pooled regression analysis, as I had mentioned. The results of that analysis revealed that compulsory license use or threat did not act as a statistically significant predictor of direct foreign investment into a nation or of the number of patent applications filed within that nation. I'd like to point out some significant limitations of this study, as there are always limitations. First and most importantly, I did conduct this analysis using a relatively modest data set, 20 data points per country, 10 countries, although it was pooled. And I'd also like to point out that the patent application data that I used from the World Intellectual Property Organization didn't distinguish between patent applications originated by foreign parties or domestic parties. So it's a little bit difficult to distinguish the amount of technology transfer into a country on that basis. The conclusion of this research is simply that the results pursuant to my study don't support the hypothesis that nations issuing or threatening to issue compulsory licenses will experience these untoward economic effects. Direct to foreign investment doesn't appear to be implicated by compulsory licensing, and patent applications continue to increase without regard to the amount of licenses that are issued. This is important for nations who are contemplating availing themselves of public health protections. They need not be concerned or apprehensive or perceive that other nations have experienced these results, at least to the extent that my study can show. What is the public health import of this project? Well, I would simply say that if the known barriers, known versus unknown, are overcome and the known secondary effects are mitigated with advanced planning, using the techniques that I've noted before, legal remedies, say, economic regulations to prevent parallel importation, so forth, then developing nations can hopefully successfully exercise their right to issue compulsory licenses for essential medications and maximize the global public health. And with that, I'll conclude. Thanks.